This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Hi, my name is Gus Garza. I'm from the program by London, Texas. I want to invite everybody to a second annual benefit dance for KPFT 90.1 Friday, December the 7th from 8 o'clock on at Bees Island Club, 2719 South Ritchie in Houston. Four groups of Tejano music. Donations $5 all night, so get there early because it's going to be good. 21 and older, make sure you make this and don't be left out and say, I didn't know anything about it. Second annual benefit dance for KPFT
Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Valinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
I'm Deborah Bell.
And J.D. Doyle.
And I'm Glenn Holt. And tonight, David Elliott from Washington, D.C., with Inside the Beltway and Beyond Report. The Iowa caucus is just a month away, and David will talk about the new Iowa poll and what happens next, as well as a recent LGBT poll and voting trends. Community photographer Dalton DeHart talks with Jack Valinsky about the upcoming event at the Montrose Counseling Center, a fundraiser for their building where Dalton will be honored. And J.D. and Deborah will visit with some of the stars of Stage's theater holiday season with the heavenly hit comedy Altar Boys. Plus This Way Out and the internationally syndicated radio magazine Music and More.
And as we wait for David to call us, well, lots of lines blinking over there.
Yeah, and actually, in that poll, it was just LGB people. The T's were not included, Jennifer.
they try to make the T's silent all the time, don't they?
But anyway, so that'll be interesting. David had some real insight on, he keeps his pulse, fingers on the pulse.
They probably didn't recognize them as T's. They were just as lesbians.
I was thinking that they may not have, how people self-identify. Well, we had lights flashing, and now they weren't, and now we have more. It's, it's like the Christmas lights, Oh, the Heights is beautiful already.
And Wednesday this week, in lieu of the normal general meeting of the GLBT Political Caucus, it's a holiday party.
Oh, yeah? Where is that going to be?
It's going to be over on Woodhead, and the address you can find on the website, thecaucus.org. And to find it there,
just come and party.
Come and party. Maybe, that's right. You can write a check too and donate. We'd appreciate that. Anise Parker will be there to speak to the group. So come and be part of it.
And that was an unsolicited message from the president of the Houston Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, Transgender Political Caucus.
Absolutely.
Okay. That's do we have David Elliott with us?
On the line with us now is David Elliott from Washington. Good evening, David.
Well, good evening, Jack. And who do we have in studio today?
Jennifer. Well, you have everybody here.
And Deb and JD. But I think we're just going to leave you with Jack mainly.
Well, we've got some exciting news to report tonight, some exciting times coming up. So I want to jump right into it, okay?
Go for it.
In 4 weeks and 3 days, voters will trek through the snowy fields and streets of Iowa to caucus for their favorite candidate. Slightly more than 200,000 people are expected to participate. 5 days later, voters in New Hampshire will take part in that state's primary elections. And before January is over, voters in six other states, Wyoming, Michigan, Nevada, South Carolina, Hawaii, and Florida, will follow suit. We're finally electing a new president. And I want to tell y'all, in so many ways, this election is unique in modern American history. For example, it is the first time in modern U.S. history that both parties' nominating contests are wide open. And it is quite likely that for the first time in U.S. history, one party will nominate either a woman candidate or an African-American candidate to be its presidential nominee. I'll leave it to you all to guess which party that would be. Now, there are 17 more or less serious Democratic and Republican candidates running for president. But for all practical purposes, I will argue tonight that only five candidates have a chance of securing their party's nominations. Three Democrats and two Republicans. I'm forecasting tonight a two-person race for the Republican nomination between former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee and former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney. The campaigns of Fred Thompson and John McCain have simply failed to catch fire, and the campaign of Rudy Giuliani is in the midst of a New York City-sized implosion, courtesy of some recent allegations regarding taxpayer-funded protection and transportation for a woman who was Rudy's third-party mistress at the time. And so it goes. On the Democratic side, things are a bit more predictable, but just a bit. The frontrunners are Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. John Edwards is on the outside looking in, but he certainly still has a chance. No one else seems primed for a Mike Huckabee-style breakthrough. So let's get to some breaking Iowa poll numbers that were just reported last night. The big surprise here is a recent surge by Mike Huckabee. In early October, Huckabee was in third place in Iowa, trailing both Romney and Fred Thompson, and picking up only 12% of the vote. Today, Huckabee is easily in first place, capturing 29% of the vote, 17 points better than his last showing just a month and a half ago. Romney is in second place with 24%, a drop of 5 points since 2 months ago, and Giuliani brings up third place with 13% of the vote, undoubtedly an unlucky number for him. On the Democratic side, Obama has fought his way into first place with 28% of the vote. That's in Iowa. And that's a pickup of 6 points from early October. Clinton has 25% of the vote, down from 29%. And Edwards has 23% of the vote, unchanged since that October poll. Now, it's really important to point out that these polling numbers I mentioned have a 4.4% margin of error, meaning that the differences between the top three Democratic candidates are statistically insignificant. This means that especially on the Democratic side, Iowa is still too close to call. And frankly, predicting the outcome of the Iowa caucus is always tricky. Mm-hmm. I mean, at this point in time, 4 years ago, John Kerry and John Edwards were in third and fourth place, respectively, behind frontrunner Howard Dean and Congressman Dick Gephardt. But after Gephardt and Dean turned their firepower on each other, Kerry and Edwards eclipsed them, finishing first and second in the first balloting for the 2004 presidential election. Perhaps a more important question than who will win Iowa is, will it really matter? It is interesting to note that no Republican has ever won both the Iowa caucus and the New Hampshire primary, not one. The Republican parties in each of these two early bird states are quite different. Iowa Republicans tend to be religious conservatives, while New Hampshire Republicans tend to be economic conservatives, not as focused on social issues such as equal rights for lesbian and gay people and abortion. Nonetheless, it is perhaps informative to note that Huckabee is making huge inroads in national polling. A month ago, he was barely a blip on the national radar. Today, he is within 3 percentage points nationally of Giuliani, the supposed frontrunner, who actually has dropped 5 points in one national tracking poll in the last 5 days. Now, on the Democratic side, it is not entirely surprising that Hillary Clinton is in second place in Iowa. After all, Her husband did not campaign there when he first ran for president in 1992. He effectively yielded the state to Iowa Senator Tom Harkin, who was a presidential candidate that year. And Iowa Democrats canceled their 1996 caucus since Bill Clinton was unopposed in the Democratic primary for a second term. The question for Hillary is this. If she, as I expect, loses Iowa, can she turn New Hampshire into a firewall that will stop Obama's momentum and turn the Democratic race into an inevitable coronation of her candidacy? That's what it comes down to. Hillary's organizational strength versus Obama's, quote, it's time for a change, unquote, mantra. It's truly going to be a battle of two titans. Meanwhile, and this is the other thing I wanted to report tonight, there is a new poll out there. Jack, you actually emailed this to me. This poll came out last week that shows Hillary Clinton with incredibly strong support among lesbian, gay, and bisexual Americans.
Yeah, that sort of surprised me.
Well, it actually didn't me. It didn't surprise me, Jack, because, you know, Bill Clinton was, Bill Clinton was known as, you know, really the first president we ever had that was at all pro-gay. He wasn't pro-gay, lesbian in all aspects, but he was in many. And second, and I've seen this up close and personal, Hillary Clinton connects with gay and lesbian people. When you see her work a crowd with gay and lesbian people, she just really seems to connect with us, with the population. And I can't explain it, but the numbers are strong.
Yes, and she also represents a very urban state.
Well, that's true. And you know, what the poll found was that she has the support of 63% of lesbian, gay, bisexual likely voters in the Democratic primary, followed by Obama, who has 22%, and Edwards, who has 7%. Those numbers are much, much better than for the general population. And, you know, I should also note just a couple of things. 9 out of every 10 lesbian, gay, bisexual voters are going to vote in the Democratic primaries. 21% say that lesbian and gay rights will be the most important issue influencing their vote. On the Democratic side, 72% of lesbian, gay, bisexual voters consider Senator Clinton to be a supporter of gay rights. 52% say the same thing about Obama. 41% say the same thing about Edwards. On the Republican side, 37% say the same thing about Giuliani, who I think is going to be out of the race in a month, and 13% say the same thing about Senator John McCain. After that, it gets really, really, really bad. You don't even want to hear the numbers. And finally, on another important issue that doesn't directly have to do with the presidential election, but it's a very, very important issue. When asked about the proposed federal law making it illegal to discriminate against lesbians, gays, and bisexuals in employment, LGB voters, by a margin of 60% to 37%, said that those seeking to pass the law were wrong to remove protections for transgendered people in order to get the votes necessary for passage in Congress.
Say that again, David. Say it again, please.
Sure. There is a big controversy. Should proponents of ENDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, throw transgendered folks overboard in an effort to get more votes in Congress for their side? According to this poll, 60% of lesbian, gay, bisexual voters said they should not.
Wow. Oh, that's good news.
And 37% said they should. And keep in mind that this was a poll that was partly funded by the Human Rights Campaign.
Interesting how that didn't come out when they were trying to blow their horn, HRC, I mean, blow their horn at how they'd been so great at accomplishing the end of bill that did pass.
Well, and I was curious about this because I think sometimes we think that we're a little bit more skewed here in Houston because we have such a strong transgendered community, and I wasn't sure whether that was representative around the country.
Well, Jackie, it clearly is, and here is what I think the kicker is. I think people get that it really comes down to gender identity. You know,
probably even more than being concerned about transgender people.
Right, right.
I'm not saying I agree with that, but that's.
Well, yeah. You know, sometimes you take two different paths to arrive at the right destination, you know? Your support for a fair and inclusive INDA could be because of your overwhelming concern that transgender folks be included, or it could be because of your more pragmatic concern that a guy who wears an earring or a girl who wears her hair short shouldn't be discriminated against. They could be straight, but they're perceived as being what's the phrase I'm looking for? They're
gender expression is what is in there.
Thank you. Yeah. So yeah, it's interesting, and it is true to say that, you know, in earlier polling and in earlier press releases by the Human Rights Campaign, this finding was not publicized for whatever reason.
Yeah, quite the contrary. They publicized another skewed poll saying that 70% said it's okay to throw the transgenders under the bus.
Right. That one they had control over. This one they helped fund, but they didn't have control over. It's kind
amazing how the results changed.
Right.
Well, I agree with you because a lot of things, and this is the point I've argued for many weeks now or months now since that happened, that gender identity and expression is really very important, especially gender expression, because very few people really get down to it. No, they're going to fire somebody because they're gay or lesbian. They're going to fire somebody because they don't quite fit the male persona or stereotype or the female stereotype, and it doesn't matter whether you're gay or straight. It's just you don't fit somebody's preconceived notion of who you should be.
Well, yeah, and I mean, to put it even more bluntly, you know me, I'm kind of in the business of doing sound bites, right?
You got it.
They're firing people because they look gay or lesbian.
That's right. You don't have to be. You just look that way.
Right.
Thank you so much.
Yes, David. Thank you for joining us. And next month we'll probably be a lot closer to know who's going to be the representative of the Republican and Democratic Party.
Well, you're certainly right, Jack. And by the way, if you want to, you know, the Iowa caucus is Thursday, January 3rd. I don't know if y'all are going to do anything political on Monday, December 31st, but if you want me on to give a pre-Iowa caucus, you know, 3 days before, just let me know and I'll be here.
We're going to be here for
yes,
New Year's Eve.
We'll be here. We don't get the day off, so you shouldn't get the day off either.
Okay, then.
It's a date, then.
Well, I don't know that I'd... I can't think of a date I'd rather have.
Oh, thank you so much.
Well, David, tell us what you do for your day job.
Well, for my day job, Jack, I'm the communications director for the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty.
And things are looking a little bit better for you, aren't they?
www.ncadp.org. And I have to tell you, on a personal note, I got a seat inside the U.S. Supreme Court for an important death penalty case that's going to be heard on Monday, January 7th, involving lethal injection protocols and whether we're putting people to death in a constitutionally permissible manner, if you'll
excuse the
phrase.
Wow, did you have to fight Nita Totenberg for that seat?
A former intern of mine who happened to go on to clerk for Justice Ginsburg actually got it for me.
Congratulations.
Did 11 seats each, and one of them just happened to fall my way. We know how Ginsburg's going to vote, but I didn't just say that.
Okay. Well, David, thank you for talking to us again. And your website is?
www.ncadp.org.
David Elliott usually joins us for the first Monday of every month to sort of give us a national perspective on what's going on that affects our community. Thank you for joining us, David. You're listening to Queer Voices.
That was David Elliott reporting live from Washington, D.C., talking to Jack Volinsky and Jennifer Renee. Coming up next on Queer Voices, community photographer Dalton DeHart.
It's a little bit redundant.
This Christmas, my husband and I, come on, you all, to camp it out.
Once again, it's come around, the choir in the sleigh bell sound. Father Christmas on his sleigh, dressed in red so bright and gay. Decorate the hearth and home with Christmas lights and snow and foam. Tinsel on the Christmas tree and on the top.
It could be me.
Camp up your Christmas. Camp up your Christmas. Camp up your Christmas. Camp up your Christmas.
Camp up and your Christmas tree.
That was Camp Up Your Christmas. This is JD. The group was called Four Poofs in a Piano from the UK. I don't know what else to say about that song.
This is Queer Voices.
Well, Dalton, you've been here a few times in the past month or so, and you're not usually the person behind the microphone. And not only that, you're not usually the person behind the light. So we're gonna change things around a little bit.
Okay.
This Thursday is a special celebration of Dalton DeHart, past, present, and future. And Dalton's doing this, not for his own good, but it's a benefit for the Montrose Counseling Center, which I am presently employed at, to give you that little disclaimer. Dalton is probably the perfect person to do this because of his dedication to the community and his ways of sort of making, you know, keeping that history by taking pictures. And so much of our history in the early time of our community has been lost that now we've got technology, but more importantly, we've got the people like Dalton who is putting that together so that we have that. So, and almost every time we see you in that event, you're always so busy taking pictures, and you're I guess you sort of feel like you're naked without your camera.
True.
It's been quite an experience, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. It really has. Since about 86, 87, when I started taking pictures in this area, it's been quite a growth experience as well as a learning experience for seeing how things change and all that sort of thing, and the hundreds of thousands of pictures that I've taken of everything in Houston, for that matter, and... it's been just
well, and not only that, you're at so many different events, and I it's just amazing. You're not the youngest person.
How true.
But you always seem to have the energy to be at, even when you were working full time, to be at all these different events that are going on, and seeming to be at the places at the right time. I don't know how you do it.
Well, I guess it's, I don't know. I do it because of the people. I enjoy the events. I enjoy the people. The people have been very kind to me, and I feel like I need to return the favor to them. And so I do it to capture the moment if I possibly can, and everybody appreciates that, and, of course, I appreciate their appreciation, so we all work together in that capacity. And as a result, I do probably over 400 events a year, and as many as 8 in one night, but not usually that many. Just this past weekend, I only did 7.
So only 7 during the holiday season? That's
true. It was a little slow weekend, but yeah. But usually, I do have 3 or 4 any given night, practically. And this, of course, last weekend was World AIDS Day, so that was
right.
The AIDS Foundation in Houston had the big luncheon with Carson Cressy there, who was just quite a hoot, and. Did that, and then, of course, the mayor had the lighting ceremony downtown where the Bayou City Performing Arts Group sang, which was really an interesting experience, too, because they're so good. And then we had the Magnolia Party that same night, and then yesterday, 2 or 3 holiday parties, and the quilts on display was on at Resurrection MCC, so I ran by there and took pictures there. Last night at the BRB, Ebesis did their Tree of Remembrance, and they put... they hung the various ornaments in memory of people who had been lost in the community over the last several years. So always something going on. And then tonight, of course, is KPFT. So that's mainly it. Tomorrow night's the GLBT Chamber of Commerce holiday party at Salud Winery. And then the weekend, I'll try to wait until then. And, of course, then Thursday night, I really don't have much of anything to do, as you well know.
Well, and what's great about that is there's going to be a number of the albums that you've taken pictures of displayed at that
mm-hmm,
event, so
exactly.
People can actually see some of the work that you did. Of course, you also have a website where your pictures are on, too.
Right.
But that, you know, sitting there or standing there and looking through the pictures and seeing the history...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just sort of flash in front of you, and also as you know, you're just talking about World AIDS Day. There's a lot of people in those pictures who are no longer with us.
Exactly,
and some of the pioneers in the community, and some of the people who've, you know, struggled to, mm-hmm. to make things work within this community.
Exactly. Yeah.
In fact, I'm starting to hide from you when you start taking pictures.
You're afraid that you'll be the next one? No, I try to get everybody in.
I know you do.
At every event. If I don't, I feel like
and
I'm
it's
a
not
failure.
Just GLBT events.
Oh, God,
a lot
no.
Of, yes, you're at a lot of other events that are political events or other type of fundraising
yes,
type
indeed.
Events, nonprofit events, and you're
college events. I do St. Jacinto College. I used to do many pictures there. I did the basketball teams and went to the national championship when we won one of the championships, and
that's where some of my best friends are, of course. And now that I've retired from full-time teaching, I'm still back out there because we still have the division chair, Ann Thomas, is still there, and Jonelle Farrar and Betty Pastanka and Margaret Loomis. And in fact, Betty and Jonelle and Margaret will be there Thursday night. And Jonelle's actually going to speak and tell you the other side of my life, the educational unit, and she's going to be one of the speakers on Thursday night. So I think you'll find that very interesting because she's an eloquent speaker and very brilliant.
Well, and Sally Huffer's with us, and Sally's with the Montrose Counseling Center, and she really helped plan this event and put it together. And what is the reason for this?
Well,
besides honoring Dalton.
Exactly. Well, one of the reasons why we selected Dalton was because his photographs represent a cross-section of our community where we can all find ourselves. That, you know, whether you're drag queen in the leather community, whether, you know, you're gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community, photos from every cross-section. And we can all see ourselves. I mean, me personally, I know that I'm in probably 400 or 4,000 photos. But we all can see ourselves, and they really reflect our community. And so for anybody that's out there that is wondering, hey, you know, I'm not Ellen, I'm not Melissa Etheridge, I'm not Elton John. Well, you know what? We all have different faces, and we're all represented. And it's not just one certain segment of our community. Dalton's photographs encompass everything. And so I think that's one of the great things is that by seeing yourself in the images that he's taken over the years, that it can reduce isolation. And then the other thing is that for everybody that knows Dalton, my gosh, you know, obviously he's doing this because he's found his passion and his authentic self, and this is what, you know, he was meant to do. And if only we could all find, you know, what it is we're meant to do. And then follow that path. I think that he embodies that more perfectly than anyone I've ever met in my life. So I think it's wonderful that he does this for the community. And so we wanted to kind of turn the camera on him and, you know, focus on Dalton for a second and say thank you to him for all that he's done.
Well, and one of the interesting things is this is going to be at a space just before construction that is going to be turned into a community resource area.
Exactly.
If you want to talk a little bit about that.
Well, and one of the things I'm a little bit worried about is people are going to come and they'll see it's on the first floor at our new building at 401 Brannard Street. And the first floor was occupied by Fitness Exchange, but they've already moved out. And so the floor is vacant, and it's pre-construction. And so we're inviting the community to come look at the area before, because beginning right after the new year, we're going to start construction on that first floor. And the first floor is going to be dedicated to the community. And so we'll have community space available. A lot of community organizations will be utilizing the space. And so since we expect that a lot of people will be there in the future, we wanted some people to come in and see the before because we know that they'll be there for the after.
And, you know, we were talking about the fact that you take pictures and you take tons and tons of pictures, but you will also do some, you do some other things in the community. You're on the board of the Bayou City Performing Arts.
Right.
You really helped organize this Houston AIDS
World AIDS Day in Houston.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you sort of twisted a few arms.
Well, perhaps, yeah, we did. We had about 35 people there, and Jane Wiener and Matt Harris, who were the ones behind this. I've been doing it for 4 years with them, and they said, well, how can we get these people together? And I started naming off who all we needed, and I named off about 20 or more different organizations. And they said, well, how are you going to get them there? And I said, well, how do we contact them? I said, well, oh, don't worry, because I've got them in my little Palm Pilot. And so I called all of them and encouraged them to come, and we did have about 35 people that first meeting, and Jane and Matt just couldn't believe it. So, and as a result of that, I guess they decided, well, maybe we'll make Dalton and Dominic Walsh the honorary co-chairs of the event this year, which we were on Saturday night.
It was really neat because all these organizations were doing events for World AIDS Day Houston, but you sort of really helped bring them all together, mm-hmm. so people were working together.
Exactly.
And not only that, is that that we all know that all these different events are going on, and try to help coordinate them as mm-hmm. much as possible, so that people know that there's, you know, all this going on.
Mm-hmm. Yes, in fact, Jane and I were talking Saturday night at the event, and afterwards we went to eat with a group from New York, the House of Ninja Boys, and the others that came in, and we went to eat, and it was just an incredible experience, because those guys were just out of this world. They just were really something else. So, and then we went to Meteor, and they have the little stage, and of course, I'd already told the manager, I said, they're going to perform on the stage, and sure enough, they did.
You just told him, right?
Yeah, correction, I asked him if it'd be all right. It would be all right if they performed. They said, yeah, that would be fine. But Jane and I said then, said, okay, we need to start now. So probably next week we'll get together and start planning for next year, because we need to get this. And Brian Labinka, who was on the radio show the other day.
And he's a new volunteer.
And new volunteer, I know. Yeah, a new intern. And he helped put it all together, and Tim Martinez and many others. So we did have an incredible group to pull it all together. And we have red ribbons everywhere. We just came from Inverse Cafeo there, and they had a whole bowl of World AIDS Day ribbon is still there for people to put on. So Jane's idea was to bring the red ribbon back, and I think that's a great idea, and I think we did a respectable
yes,
job.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we did.
Absolutely. So this Thursday evening,
mm-hmm.
From 6:30 to 8 p.m.,
6 to 8:30 p.m.
6 to 8:30.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's right, because Dalton has had so many people speaking and performing. I had to add an extra half hour.
That's true.
We yes. might have to add more than just an extra half hour.
Yes, I have to admit that we got talking about entertainment, and I said, well, let's get some of the local people to sing, and so I contacted half a dozen or so that I know out of. Well, more than that, of course. And so they're all going to perform. And Sharon Montgomery, Marsha Carlton, Alan Lett, Josh Duffy. And I just talked to Rebecca Dahl from Masquerade Theater, who's one of the most wonderful, beautiful women I know. And she said if she could get her guitar player to come, that she would like to do that as well. So we have that. And we have people speaking, like Jonelle's going to speak from the college from the educational standpoint. And then, of course, Ray Hill.
Well, you couldn't.
He
stop
would speak
it,
yeah. whether or not
you asked him.
Or not.
Right? Yes, we know that.
And Anise Parker is going to speak, and some others. And I think I saw Sheila Jackson Lee three times this weekend. So she's either going to be there, or she's going to send a representative. And of course, Sue Lovell, who's one of our wonderful people. I think we'll have a good time. We'll have a little wine, a little food, entertainment, socializing, and. Photo taking. We'll be taking a lot of photos. I'm not going to take all of them, because I've got about three other people who are going to have my other cameras, and they're going to help out, but I don't think I could probably survive without taking a few.
You mean this time you're going to be in some of the pictures?
I probably will. I usually am in one at every event. I try to get in one picture, but that's all. And if they get more than that, I'll call them out. But
well, and then also, I mean, I wanted to mention that thanks to the Gulf Coast Archives, the Museum of Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgender History, I know I couldn't get through that without taking a breath. Thanks to GCAM, we will have several, and by several I mean at least 25, albums from the past, so that if there are people that you haven't seen for a long time, if you were active in the Garden Party or Miss Camp America or EPA, you know, in the last 25 years, we might have your picture there. Mm-hmm. Or we might have some photos of people that are long gone that we miss terribly. And so we'll have a lot of those albums, thanks very much, like I said, to GCAM. And we'll have wine is going to be donated by Barefoot Winery, and food from a number of different venues. So it should be very nice.
It should be a wonderful community evening. And if you have all been involved in the community or want to get involved in the community, this would be a great event. It's benefiting the Montrose Counseling Center Building Fund. And it is a really special tribute to Dalton DeHart, who's been a wonderful community activist and a community leader and a community resource. And we really want to thank him for all the work he's done. And you know, this makes my job here a lot easier because of the great people that have been involved in putting a lot of these things together. So it's this Thursday evening, mm-hmm. From 6 to 8:30, maybe a little bit longer.
It may go on later. Yes, it might. Yeah.
Yes.
And it'll be at the first floor at Montrose Counseling Center, 401 Brannard Street. There's information about the event at our website, which is www.montrosecounselingcenter.org. And there's also, if you would like to sponsor the event, or if you would like to, there's a $30 donation request at the door. If you would like to pay that online, you can do that through Network for Good, and that's also linked through our website.
Well, Sally Huffer and Dalton, thank you very much for being on Queer Voices this evening. And, of course, you're listening to Queer Voices.
Jennifer Renee, Sally Huffer, and Jack Falinski were talking with Dalton DeHart, photographer to the gay community. Up next, J.D. and Deborah will visit with the stars of Stages Theater Holiday Season with the hit comedy Altar Boys.
We are the altar boys.
We know that God is where it's
church is super fine.
We are the altar boys.
We love the wafers and wine.
We are the altar boys.
And I think you're fine. We're gonna alter your mind.
This is Jamie Doyle, and this is going to be a fun segment. That music was from the off-Broadway show Altar Boys, and we've got a local production going on at Stages, so you know it's a quality show. And with us to talk about it, we've got Ken McLaughlin, the producing artistic director, and three of the cast members, three of the Altar Boys. We're going to go right to Ken, and Ken, I want to find out, tell us about the play.
Well, it is pure joy, J.D., nothing but fun. It's a Christian boy band rock concert, and it takes place as the boys are just about to finish their Raise the Praise tour. So it's the final night of their tour going around, saving souls around the country, and the drama builds from what actually has happened in their lives off stage, and as the concert goes on, you learn more and more about what their lives have been like, how they've become friends, and what the future holds for them, which is kind of the biggest part of the drama all along. And it's a beautiful, beautiful, fun play. And driving over here, I was talking with our research development manager, Lisa Bond, and we were talking about the fact that the play has such a holiday message, because in the end, it's really about how to give love to other people, how to really celebrate your friendships and make them matter, and it only exists for one reason, and that's to make people really, really happy. And I think that that's probably the core of what we're all looking for this time of year.
How did you pick the play, and was it hard to get the rights to do it?
No, as a matter of fact, I picked the play because it's a cult favorite, really. I mean, it's played for years in New York. It did a national tour, but it didn't come to Houston. And in fact, it was really interesting. I was talking to someone who had the opportunity to bring it to Houston, a dear friend of mine, who said he thought it was a little too, what was the word he used? It was just a little too edgy. And I said, edgy? What's edgy about Altar Boys? But it was an interesting thought to me. And of course, my ears perked up, and I thought, well, that sounds like Stages. And then I read it, and I just absolutely positively loved it, and I called right away. And the rights had not been released yet, but we were kind of first on the list. And so the minute the rights were released, they called us back and said, yeah, you can have it. So I was pretty excited.
Well, I've got the soundtrack. I've had it for about a week, and several of the songs already just stand out of my mind. They're just very good
songs. Oh, they get stuck there.
And I've been looking online. Of course, you two have clips of everything.
Yeah.
So I'm seeing clips of other productions, and wow, this is not only funny. The dancing looks like it's going to be superb. The acting, in some cases, over the top.
In some cases, it can be. It can be. You know, what's interesting about this production is it's scenic design has been a really good friend of mine that I worked with for years in my career back in Cleveland, who has just gone out of his way to create the funnest world for this play. And it's really, you know, the Altar Boys are not necessarily the most popular of bands in their career, but we actually took a different take on it, and we said, well, what if in fact they really kind of were and just didn't know it? You know, that their own naivete is actually what prevents them from being the megastars they could be. And so that was kind of our design take. So you'll see, I mean, this is without a doubt the most ambitious production Stages has ever produced, certainly in my 7 years there. The lights, the set, the costumes, everything is just as the highest quality. And we've been working overtime for a week now, and everybody's just so jazzed about this play, more jazzed than anything. I think anybody who saw Trailer Park and loved it is going to go bonkers for this play.
Well, just obviously, so you're jazzed.
I am. I start talking. And look at this. You can't see it on the radio,
well,
but you
no,
should see these boys.
Yeah, unfortunately, you can't see these gorgeous young men, but they must be very talented as well, because they have to act, they have to sing, and they have to dance. What do they call that?
A triple threat.
Yeah, triple threat. And so let's talk to them a little bit, because now it's a Christian boy band, but there's one Jew.
Why don't you guys talk a little bit?
How does that work?
How that all works now.
Go ahead.
I think the script kind of calls him the gefilte fish out of water.
And you are?
I'm Dylan Godwin. I play Juan.
Juan?
The Latin lover.
Uh-huh. I can tell. I would imagine it.
Oh, my God.
My name is Christopher Stock. I play Matthew.
And?
My name's Josh Rua. I play Luke.
I was noticing the names of the characters.
Matthew, Mark, Luke, and Juan.
And Juan. And I was like, "What? Wait a minute. Yep. I don't
and Abraham.
And you got Abraham.
And
Jude.
And I'm like, I don't remember a Juan. But, of course, I guess it calls for the diversity of...
International appeal.
That's right. Yes. That's right.
Well, ethnic is in, you know.
And so what it's like to be an altar boy and...
I think it's fantastic being an altar boy. I'm having a great time. I'm working with some incredibly, incredibly talented people.
Did you guys know each other before the show?
Not at all. Nope.
And you gelled, I guess?
Yeah.
Sort of.
Well, you know.
Who's the best dancer?
None of them have that.
Wait, until the show opens,
right,
let's
away.
Keep it down here, boys. Yeah. We all have our individual traits and personalities and characteristics. I think we all bring something really special
the
to the
diplomat.
Table.
Diplomat.
Yeah. Who's the most over the top?
He's not here right now.
Perfect answer.
He's not
here. He's the
he's
one
not
that's
here.
Not here.
Is that the one that plays Mark, the... How would you talk about Mark? Because this is kind of, for our audience, that's more of a focal point. Tell us, how does Mark fit into the show?
Well,
you can say it here on Queer Voices.
I think
he's
that
probably
the,
not listening.
The thing about the character of Mark is that, you know, when we present our show to the audience, there's no doubt that they know... They know exactly like who he is and what he's all about, but to us he's just like, you know, our buddy.
Yeah.
He's our friend. He's somebody that we've grown up with.
But the rumor is that he's gay.
That's putting it lightly.
Yeah.
Put it lightly, yes. But again, we don't know that. He's just he is who he is.
Does he know he's gay?
It doesn't come up.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's kind of, that's one of the things I loved about the play, Deb, for myself as a gay person, is that the world of the altar boys is so innocent and so without judgment on anyone that like Josh said, it doesn't come up. And that's kind of the beauty of the play, is the way they see the world is they love each other and they're friends. And so the things that divide us in our outer culture, like he's gay, he's Jewish, he's,
yeah,
you know, unloved or whatever, or he's a junkie or whatever it could be, that the altar boys don't see it that way. They see, this is my friend and
uh-huh.
I love them.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of that's the innocence of the play that's so beautiful.
Leonard Pitts, the writer, did a good article about when Dumbledore was outed from the Harry Potter books, and he was talking to two young women that he knew, like, you know, young teens, and they were like, oh, okay, he's gay, and to them it was like that was just one more thing to know about the character. You know, it was not this big shocking thing. And when I heard that, I said, well, of course he was, but I never thought about it.
Yeah.
You know, when I was reading the books or watching the movie, and I never thought about that. But and I guess that's our idealism. That's the way we'd want the world to be.
Isn't there sort of a coming out song?
Well, yeah. It's something. I mean, you got to come and see the show to really get the full effect of it.
Yeah.
But you're just touching on what you had said. I think the beauty of the show is that you have five archetypal characters who could not be more different, and yet, you know, you see these people maybe on the street and you would think there's no, why would they even be hanging out, but in the world of the play these people are family, and it works very well that way.
Yeah.
And they almost need each other, and they need sort of the inequity of each character relies on the character that, you know, he's next to sort of get along.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like although there's some, you know, crazy situations and everything, I think for me the thing that makes it work the most as a show is that every character is so sincere, and everything that they're saying and trying to get across to the audience is done with, like, absolute sincerity, you know, and it's written that way, and so it comes across in a nice way, I think.
So what's the fun and the excitement of doing this show?
I think it's just, it's high energy, it's pop music, it's... You know, it's a comedy, so I think that there's probably something for everybody in it, something that's gonna, you know, I think throughout the course of the evening, like, I think audiences are gonna fall in love with one of the five of us, you know?
Or all of us.
Or all of us at once. You know,
I am
think,
already, and I'm a lesbian.
You know,
I mean, go figure.
It's just gonna be great. You know, it's always fun
to... Well, I also think that we've been tagging for the last 2 days, and I think you could sit in the audience and just watch the light cues on the set without us and be pretty much entertained. Yeah, it's exactly. Pretty incredible.
Explain teching.
It's a process where you have to go cue to cue to set all the lights and all the sound and everything. But, you know, when done right, it makes it come off without a hitch.
So even if you weren't on the stage, there would be entertainment.
I think so.
Yeah.
I've got a question for Ken. When you take a show like that was off Broadway, does it come with set choreography or ideas for the choreography, or do you come up with that locally, or what?
It depends on your choices, actually. This particular production comes, you can order an awful lot of the elements from the original production. There's an element in the show called the soul sensor, and one of the things is that the boys are trying to save the souls of everyone in the audience, so there's a sensor that judges whether or not your soul has been saved. And you can order the original one in New York, or you can design your own. Now, we chose very specifically, in working with Scott Thompson, the director, who's just a genius, to really go in a different direction. This is all original choreography. Danny Calvert, who actually isn't with us, we were referencing him as Mark, was in the original New York production, and then in an L.A. production. So he had to learn all new choreography for the third time to do the show, and he has said...
Confusing. You have to unlearn.
He really said it's pretty much the most demanding stuff that he's done. And another thing I wanted to say earlier when we were talking to Deb about the kind of thing it takes to do this, you know, these boys all have to belt... What's your high notes? I mean, you guys are all belting like high C's and B-flats.
And they do this for 2 hours?
And while they're straight, no intermission, and while they're dancing a boy band choreography. I mean, it is incredible. We auditioned the show extensively here in Houston and then went to New York to continue to find the people who could actually do what the score demanded of them. I mean, it's pretty spectacular.
I'm sorry.
Lee sent me all your bios, but I don't want to just like, here. So why don't you each say your name again and say a little bit about your history and what has brought you here to be part of Altar Boys in Houston. And then we'll finish up with the details of, how you get tickets all that stuff. So let's start over here.
I'm Dylan Godwin. And like I said earlier, I'm playing Juan. I'm actually a senior at in the musical theater department at Sam Houston State University. And I'm living in Houston because I moved here, I guess, last year to do two shows with Theater Under the Stars, Beauty and the Beast and 110 in the Shade. And prior to that, I did a national tour of Fiddler on the Roof for a year and kind of took a year off from college with that. And I'm just trying to finish school, and this opportunity came up to do this, and I thought, wow, I can do school in this, and it'll be really wonderful. So that's where I am right now.
It is wonderful. And?
I'm Christopher Stock. I'm playing the role of Matthew. My personal history, just specifically talking about the show Altar Boys, I've been in for it in several different companies around the United States. The New York company I've been in for, like the past couple of years, and finally, thank God, somebody took a chance on me and let me into this production in, the role of Matthew, which is the role that I've been in for so many times, and I'm thrilled to actually finally be doing it.
So you are Matthew.
He really is.
Well, he's Matthew, is he not?
Oh, my God.
And then over here.
Like I said, my name's Josh Rua, and I'm playing Luke. And Chris and I, it's funny, actually we met at the final call for this production, and I was sort of in the same boat. I'd gone in multiple times for the role of Matthew, and they'd seen me from Matthew to Juan to Abe, and I'd go in and they just were it just never really clicked. And finally, as I was about to leave this audition, Scott Thompson, our director, he's like, why don't you read Luke? And I thought,
finally.
Hopefully this will click. And I read one line, and I, it just felt good. And I actually read with Chris.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, there you go. And the magic happens.
Yeah.
We knew right then.
Let's get the details in.
Yeah. And it's Altar Boys, and boys is with a Z at the end.
The trendy way,
And it's at Stages Repertory Theater, one of the premier theaters here in Houston. It's a musical sensation, and very funny as well, which I think is good. And the details of getting tickets is to call Stages. The number for the box office is 713-527-0123. Of course, Stages is Allen Parkway near Wall Drive, off a little place over there. And if you go online, they'll give you the map and tell you how to get there. And the web address is www.stagestheater, and that's theater with an R-E, .org. Isn't it?
.com.
Okay, I was thinking maybe it was an org. Yeah, I don't know why.
When's the show start, Ken?
Yeah.
It previews this Wednesday, the 5th. It opens officially on the 7th, which is this Friday, and runs through the 20th of January. And tickets are selling like a house on fire, so you better go now and get them, because they are going to be gone. I guarantee you they'll be gone.
Okay, well, that's good. And there's also another play that's taking place at Stages, because they have two theaters there. And this is Sister Christmas Catechism, The Mystery of the Magi's Gold, which I also is a comedy, and I hear, you know, great things about it as well. So you have two choices as one at one of our favorite theaters here in Houston, and that is right here. I have the www.com thing right here in front of my face, like twice. Once again, we've been talking to the cast members of Altar Boys, and anything that we didn't ask you about that you think is important?
Well, I want to put in that there are packages for the shows. You can get Sister
Don't
Gist.
Don't say exact amounts. Just say they are special.
Two for special prices. And,
for some amount.
For some magical amount. And also a dinner package with the Daily Review. You can have dinner in the show
cool.
for an incredibly reasonable price. It almost sounds like getting two plays for one.
That would be a great Christmas gift.
Yes, it would be fantastic.
Yeah.
I'd buy it today if I were you.
Or a Hanukkah gift.
Yeah. Or whatever. Your Kwanzaa. I celebrate them all. If I get presents, get to eat food, get to dress up, I'm for all of it. So thank you, people from Stages, the Altar Boys, for being with us here on Queer Voices.
Thank you.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Walensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Bridget Strong.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the 2 weeks ending December 1st, 2007. Homophobic John Howard became only the second Prime Minister in Australian history to lose his own parliamentary seat as the former opposition Labour Party, led by Kevin Rudd, scored an overwhelming victory in national elections November 24th. That ended the 11-year rule of Howard's oxymoronically named Liberal Party. How much more queer-friendly a Labour government will be remains to be seen. Rudd is opposed to marriage equality, but promised during the campaign that a Labour government would implement most of the recommendations of the Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission, which in June urged changes to 58 national laws that discriminate against same-gender couples. In a press release celebrating Howard's undoing, Rod Swift of the Australian Coalition for Equality wrote that, "Our job will be to keep Labour to its promises and to ensure it fulfills the great hopes it has raised for reform." The outgoing Howard government pushed through a federal law in 2004 defining marriage as exclusively heterosexual and twice quashed legislation in the Australian Capital Territory to create civil unions for lesbi-gay couples. Incoming Attorney General Robert McClelland told reporters that Labour is unlikely to block a third attempt. The state of Tasmania has had a same-gender partnership law since 2004. One analyst said the election results in Australia demonstrated a deep shift in societal attitudes during the last decade. Howard worked to enshrine a traditional view of the family, to reassert a white Australian identity and the role of the churches, wrote Dr. Lindy Edwards of the Research School of Social Sciences at the Australian National University. More than half of Australians under 50 now consider a gay couple with children to be a family. More Australians believe government should do more to help Aboriginal people. It appears to be part of a general increase in Australians' commitment to equality and justice. But dozens of anti-queer protesters from churches and mosques across Uganda staged a noisy demonstration on November 24th as the Queen opened the summit of the Commonwealth Heads of Government in Kampala. They accused Western countries of spreading homosexuality throughout Africa. The Interfaith Rainbow Coalition Against Homosexuality in Uganda claimed in a statement that developed countries in the Commonwealth legalized homosexuality and influenced the poor states. Neither the Queen nor the heads of government from the 48 former British colonies that make up the Commonwealth reportedly saw the demonstration. Earlier in the week, an international group of activists and their supporters called the Commonwealth People's Forum on LGBT Rights issued a list of recommendations to the assembled leaders, including the abolition of sodomy laws in countries such as Uganda and India, ending state-sanctioned brutality against sexual minorities, and the recognition of same-gender relationships. But Ugandan Cabinet Minister Nisaba Buturo told reporters that homosexuality has no room in this country. Last month, Uganda's leading Muslim cleric proposed to President Yoweri Museveni that homosexuals be rounded up and marooned on an island in Lake Victoria until they die. Male homosexuality is illegal in Uganda under laws originally established by the British colonizers in the 19th century. Offenders face a maximum sentence of life in prison. Anti-queer attacks, both verbal and physical, are commonplace in Uganda, but have been on the rise since August, when several representatives of LGBT groups held a first-ever public news conference to demand basic civil rights. Fearing government reprisals, many wore disguises.
But Uruguay's lower house passed legislation on November 29th to create civil unions for same-gender and heterosexual couples. That bill and a similar measure passed earlier in the Senate must be reconciled into a single law for a final vote. Unless unanticipated backsliding occurs, passage is considered to be only a formality. The measure, a campaign promise of the ruling leftist coalition, is expected to become law before the end of the year. Couples would have to have been together for at least 5 years and sign a registry, which would entitle them to pension, inheritance, and parenting rights. Same-gender marriage will remain illegal in Uruguay, something LGBT rights groups say they will continue to fight. But they say the civil unions bill is a step in the right direction in a region traditionally dominated by the Roman Catholic Church. Buenos Aires approved the continent's first civil union law in 2002, and the neighboring Brazilian state of Rio Grande do Sul passed similar legislation 2 years later. Civil unions also became legal in Mexico City and the state of Coahuila this year. Uruguay is poised to become the first country in Latin America to have a national civil unions law.
Meanwhile, about 25,000 people marched in the 16th LGBT Pride Parade in Buenos Aires on November 17th. This year's theme was, Our Celebration is a Demand, Freedom, Equality, Diversity. Organizers and marchers called for marriage equality, not just the civil unions available only in the capital, and for new laws against discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. Argentina's incoming president, Cristina Kirchner, has reportedly expressed support for a national civil unions law.
Some 300 people joined the 4th LGBT Equality March in Poznan, Poland's fifth largest city, on the same day. They were protected by about 400 police officers. A similar march was banned in 2005. Activists took to the streets anyway and were pursued by members of all Polish youth chanting, Let's gas the fags. When police ordered the marchers to halt, many sat down in the street and at least 70 of them were aggressively arrested. A parade was allowed in 2006 following harsh criticisms from the European Union and ruling by Polish courts that the 2005 ban was illegal. Anti-queer protesters at this year's event were limited to what one organizer called a few football hooligans. Politicians from leftist parties took part in the celebration. This year's Pride events also included parties, movies, art exhibits, lectures, a concert, and an auction.
But progressive Polish activists have expressed dismay over their newly elected government's refusal to sign on to the European Union Charter of Fundamental Rights. In a TV debate during the campaign, now Prime Minister Donald Tusk had pledged to sign the charter, which broadly mirrors the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and the European Convention on Human Rights, and could have offered lesbian gay people in Poland the possibility of some basic civil rights protections. Former Prime Minister Jarosław Kaczyński had refused to endorse the charter, claiming that his country was culturally different from its EU partners, especially regarding the rights of LGBT people and the use of death penalty. In his first address to the Polish parliament last week, Tusk said he would honor the position of the previous government and join the UK as the only nations in the 27-member EU to opt out. In Poland, lamented Tomasz Zabula, Secretary General of the National Campaign Against Homophobia, there's no anti-hate speech, anti-hate crime, or anti-discriminatory laws which mention sexual orientation, and now there won't be the Charter of Fundamental Rights. The Charter will become legally binding on EU signatories, including cases in the European Court of Justice, as part of a new reform treaty drafted in Lisbon in October. It's scheduled to be formally signed in that city on December 13th. In other news, December 13th will also mark the debut of gay singing duo Jason and DeMarco in Singapore. A scheduled performance by the pair 2 years ago for Safe Haven, a queer-affirming Christian support group, was banned by the authorities because they said alternative lifestyles are against the public interest. Singapore's Media Development Authority okayed this year's Hope Concert after being assured by organizers that its purpose is AIDS education and HIV prevention, an increasing concern that the government in the tightly controlled city-state has been forced to address. A gay man in the U.S. state of Virginia, who was told in early November to remove his car license plates because they spell out the word poofter, British slang for gay, has now reportedly been told he can keep them. David Phillips, who's had the plates for 11 years, told the Washington Post that it's just an amusing word that I self-identify with. The Virginia Department of Motor Vehicles ordered Phillips to return the poofter plates because they were considered to be offensive. Phillips told an online blog last week that the DMV phoned him and relented. He says he still wants a formal apology from them. And finally, if your holiday gift shopping has hit a snag, assuming you've got the ever elusive disposable income, an online company that markets decidedly odd items may have what you're looking for.
Thank you all very much for coming out today.
A talking action doll of Idaho Senator Larry Craig that uses his now infamous press conference proclamation.
I am not gay. I never have been gay.
Craig was arrested in June by an undercover police officer in the Minneapolis airport restroom. The officer said the senator swiped his hand under the stall and tapped his foot next to his in a way that's often used to signal a desire for sex. Craig has claimed that he has a wide stance when on the toilet, and the officer misunderstood those motions. But he pleaded guilty to a lesser misdemeanor charge to avoid being prosecuted for lewd conduct. He's since been trying to get his plea deal overturned, thus far unsuccessfully. The conservative Republican, who throughout his career has voted against every LGBT civil rights measure, initially promised to resign, but later said he will finish his term, which ends in January 2009. The talking Larry Craig doll, which stands about 12 inches tall, also wears a T-shirt with his "I am not gay" pronouncement. The arms are bendable, the company says on its website, so you can put him in all sorts of poses, even the famous wide stance the senator refers to. Stupid.com sells several other unique items, including a George W. Bush countdown keychain. That's News Wrap for the 2 weeks ending December 1st, 2007, written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Bridget Strong.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
We will have more from This Way Out later in the program. But next, Yolanda Jones. This is Queer Voices.
And we have an election coming up this Saturday. Actually, there's one more day of early voting tomorrow between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. And for voting locations, you can go to harrisvotes.org. With us in the studio is Yolanda Jones, and she's running for at-large District 5, which is currently being held by Michael Berry. He's term limited. But we also need to say, though, that KPFT does not endorse any candidates because we're a nonprofit organization, and we try to be fair. However, Yolanda has been in the community working, not only in our community, but in a lot of the progressive communities. And tell us a little bit, Yolanda, about your background.
Well, my background is that I'm a native Houstonian from Third Ward. I am the oldest of five in a single-parent household. I'm a public school product. I am a graduate of the University of Houston undergrad and law school. And I just find causes that equalize people. That's what I do.
And so you've represented a number of people that probably didn't have the ability to get representation?
Oh, yes. A large part of my law practice is indigent defense. But the truth is I represent so many different people. I remember I had a transgender client not too long ago, and it was really sad how the courts attempted to deal with my client. But I fought for her, and so I treat all my clients the same, regardless of where they come from, even though there's blatant discrimination against them.
And in the election, you came out number one.
Yes, I did.
And so that was in, how many people were running that race?
There were eight people in the
eight
race.
Eight people.
Yes, I came in first. I had 28%. Second place had 19%, and the number sort of fell in after that. And so now it's myself and the second place person on December 8th.
If you get elected, what are some of the things you'd like to tackle at City Hall?
My overall theme of everything that I do is the inclusion of everyone and fairness for everyone. With that being said, I would like for the city to be safer. I would like for there to be more police on the streets. I would like for people to be safe everywhere. So I don't want one neighborhood safer than another neighborhood. I want to look at the police budget to make sure that we're getting efficient use of our taxpayer dollar while providing good public safety. The second thing that I would like to tackle is economic development. I believe that Houston is the best city in this country to live in. I'd like to see it get better. I want for there to be economic development everywhere. Again, everything is about equality for everywhere. And so I want for all neighborhoods to have choices. I want for there to be a good quality of life where we have parks and green space, where people can feel safe wherever it is they go, whether it's to work, at home, entertainment centers, wherever it is. I'd obviously like for there to be more transportation options because I think we have too many cars on the street. Affordable housing is really, really, really important, and have affordable housing within the city limits. I don't want for working class people to be moved out because people with money want to be within the loop. So that's very, very important. And I'd like to see the city get in the business of helping people. I'd like for there to be a balance between people and business. One of the reasons why I believe we have crime like we have is because we've left some people out. So I'd like the city to be in the business of education. We've got kids whose parents are working and they're good citizens, and they can't be home at 3 o'clock when their kids get out of school. And so I'd like the city to have after-school programs for kids so that they have something positive to do, so they're not being recruited by gangs, they're not graffitiing our houses, and they're not turning into little juveniles who grow up into criminals. I'd like to see the city have some more health clinics. I'm a product of that. I was a product of Riverside Health Clinic, so I got my teeth cleaned, my vaccinations, my physicals when I did sports. Again, that's about caring for people in a place where you have a lot of people who don't have insurance and who are underinsured. Then it's really important that people be able to get preventative health care, because the truth is, if people don't get preventative health care, then we ultimately pay for it in the emergency rooms.
Yes, and we've been seeing that with the SCHIP program.
Right, absolutely.
The fact that the state didn't even put in that small share that would help so many people who don't have insurance, so many kids that don't have insurance.
Absolutely. And then, I mean, in the black community, we have HIV and AIDS, which is crazy. And there's a stigma associated with it, which I want for this city to be welcoming of everyone. Because I believe when you allow people to be who they are, then you don't have people living double lives. And you don't have the spread of the disease happening as frequently as it does. And then we need to just take a good, long, hard look at it. I'd like to see the clinics that we have test for HIV, because we have people infecting people and they don't know they're infected. So we have to take a hard look at some problems, and we have to be honest and open about it. And that way, I believe we can come up with a solution.
What other quality of life issues do you look at?
Well, obviously, I want the air to be cleaner. So if we get some of the cars off the streets, that will help. You know, I'm an advocate of the mayor's program that uses nuisance laws to regulate the air that we breathe. I would love to see more green space when there's new development. We have retention ponds or detention ponds, that we have trees, that we have parks, that we have wide sidewalks. I mean, just things like that.
As far as talking about green space and all, I know that within the planning and developments, they require a certain amount of planting when some new development comes in. Would you advocate more green, more plants, more trees to replace what they usually tear down? You know, a 60, 70, 100-year-old tree gets torn down to put you know, a 2-inch, 6-month-old tree.
Right. I want for us to be mindful of that. I think the city just passed an ordinance where when development comes in, they've got to either pay in $700 into a pool for green space so that we can buy green space somewhere, or you can put in the green space. I would like to look at that. I would like to build consensus. I would prefer to have the green space right by where I live, as opposed to the city going and putting it somewhere where I can get to it if I want it. I live in a house within the loop. I have a front yard, a backyard, and I just think that's nicer. I think there's some difficulty because the city is becoming more urban, and people are putting in concrete where there used to be green space. And I don't want for us to become a New York. I don't want for us to become a Detroit. People keep saying, well, you know, we're behind them. But I believe that's why people choose to live in Houston, because we don't want to be concrete city.
Well, ideally, it's better to have these little pocket parks that are in walking distance from where you live.
Right.
Rather than having to drive. I mean, it's great to have these great parks like Memorial or right. Herman Park, but you don't always want to drive to them. And it's a little bit difficult in a city where we don't have zoning.
Yes, that's very difficult, but we can do some kind of planning. Well, we can sit and we can speak. For example, the city can talk with HISD to figure out, so HISD can know that we're trying to put affordable housing in a neighborhood, so please don't close down the schools, because if the goal is to get young families in who are eventually going to have children, if they don't have children, who's going to move into a neighborhood where they can't send their kids down the street to go to school?
And so, there's some real disparity in different parts of town. I mean, you know, certainly in the more expensive places to live, you have all these incredible shopping centers, but in some of the poorer parts of town, you don't even have a supermarket.
Oh, absolutely. Economic development, again, equal access to economic development is important. If you live, for example, where I live, off of Benz and 288, we don't have a wide variety of anything. So if we want to be able to choose, I don't know, a nice restaurant or go get some clothes or anything, we've got to go to Kirby and 59, thereabouts, or 610 and Kirby, or South Main. And some neighborhoods have everything they want, you know, grocery stores, shopping centers, Starbucks, everything. And I would like to see that just equally distributed across the city, because the truth is, when you have economic development all in one place, that area gets all of everything. Beautiful streets, nice pretty arches, and because money is being spent there, there's a big tax base there. And the truth is, money is coming in from all over the city, but I'd like to just see that equally all over.
Well, there's a plan that the regional development, transportation development comes in there. They have like 30 years out looking at in this area, but the city really doesn't. The urban plan that they came out with this year in 07 really didn't take that into consideration. When I reviewed it, it was basically a lot of band-aids on issues that are there, but really no long-range planning that really was, you know, visionary for our city. What I understand is this city's going to double in the next 25 years, so we're going to have to build the city all over again just to accommodate our new people. Where do you see the city taking an active role in planning for that future?
I think that we need to break down the fiefdoms in this place that we call Houston. We've got different municipalities, we've got school boards, we've got HCC, we've got Metro, we've got the county. And what I really think we need to do, unlike I believe we've been doing in the past, we need to all just sit down and dialogue and figure out what our cumulative plan is, so that when we do something, it's in sync with what the county does, or with Metro does, or what with HISD does. And one of the beautiful things about my leadership style, to the extent you have any leadership ability as a council member, is to just sit down and dialogue. So if I have to lead, I'll lead. If I have to follow, I'll follow. If someone chooses for me to be the person who spearheads something, that's fine. If I'm the team player and the Indian, that's okay with me. And that's the style that I bring. So it doesn't have to come through me. I'd like to be a part of the decision making, but I'm not going to get into a fire hydrant match over who gets credit for this or that. Mm-hmm. I just want for us to have a cumulative, long-term plan where we all get together, because the city of Houston has all these overlapping municipalities. And if we do everything in a vacuum, we're going to have a bunch of different visions that are inevitably going to collide. And then what do we deal with? And that is what I hope to bring, is dialogue and a welcoming nature that I don't think has always been there.
Now, as an at-large candidate, you cover the whole city. You're elected citywide. There are some areas still within our city limits that don't even have city water or sewer going to them, which has been that way for a number of years. How do you envision taking that on?
Well, CIP, the Capital Improvement Plan, what happens within that are generally determined by the district council members, because they're in their districts. It's a smaller area. They know everything that's going on. But I am going to work closely with the district council members. And to the extent I can lend support to their staff, because, again, they are on the ground and they know what's going on in their districts, again, because they have a centralized area.
Hopefully they do, but each council district is like 200,000 people, which is a big district.
Oh, now, I absolutely agree with you, but I'm running citywide, and it encompasses nine districts.
Yes, right.
And
right.
So there's no way I can know what's going on.
Of course, of course.
Like they do, but I will not come in and presume to know what's best for a district just because I'm an at-large council member. But to the extent I can do research for them to figure out the most efficient way to get money, to the extent I can talk to other districts that have competing interests to try to balance some things, because certainly someone who doesn't have water and sewer, that district has a more urgent need than a district that has it and it may be fixed. And so, you know, I've got to figure out how to negotiate all those things, because people want what they want when they want it. But the one thing I hope to be able to bring is to give people a sense of good neighbor. I just made that word up. But we have to be good neighbors. We can't just have something just because we have it. We have to see how it affects our neighbors. And I'd like to see us be more like that.
As you've been traveling around the city campaigning, have you learned some things that maybe you didn't know before?
Yes. The funny thing is, everybody wants the same thing. They may verbalize it differently, but everyone wants to be safe. No one wants their house broken into. No one wants to be shot. Everyone wants a good job. Everyone wants for there not to be traffic. Depends on where you live as to what's first or second or what have you. Some places the police respond really quickly. So public safety isn't as big of an issue as other places. If you live out away from the center of town, then you've got to sit in traffic for a long time. So that's at the top of your list. You want more transportation options. So it just depends on where you live, but ultimately we all want the same things.
Well, it's been real interesting how they, you know, switched the cycles of the lights downtown, how much discussion has been on that one issue, you know, from changing it from it being all green or all red at one time to be sequential. And you know, it's interesting. It's also interesting that, you know, they spent all this time fixing the streets downtown, which is great. We finally got that sort of all going, and it's really nice. And but it's still a challenge in this city to even try to walk.
You're absolutely right. Some neighborhoods don't even have sidewalks.
Right.
And, I mean, you've got kids walking to school with no sidewalks. Yeah.
Well, and that's, you brought up that point, and the mayor has talked about it, the way the trains go through the city and sometimes stop. And the kids try to go through the train, you know, while it's stopped, which is just so dangerous.
Oh. You know, it's really funny. I haven't grown up poor. My mother taught us and my grandmother, distinction between a need and a want. And a lot of times in this city, we've got to figure out what's a need and what's a want. It's interesting to me that we spend a lot of time talking about the synchronization of lights downtown when most people aren't downtown, except for the really big economic people are downtown, and we have parts of the city where they're dumping dead bodies. But we're not talking about that. And so I think, again, there needs to be a refocus. And I know the city used to be focused on its people as opposed to the business, although I think there can be a nice balance, because, again, I was a product of after-school programs where the city funded programs that helped little ghetto kids like me grow up to be lawyers, candidates for city council. And we need to get back to that, because the truth is, when you neglect people and people become disenfranchised, then people lose hope. And when people lose hope, then you have people just not caring about human life or human property. And so you have people shooting people because things aren't fair. And so I just think the city needs to just refocus. Again, this is the greatest city in the country to live in, but we can do better.
One of the things is, and you've spoken about equality and for everyone, as well as most of us have the same needs. We want a place to live that's safe, and we want a job that we can count on and depend on. But yet, as the fourth largest city in the country, the government itself doesn't stand up and say that that in employment and housing, it should be equal for everyone, which in our case for Queer Voices, you know, that's the GLBT community. How do you think the city should take a stand to protect all its citizens in their housing and employment?
I think people should not be discriminated against on all, you know, race, sex, gender, or sexual orientation. And I work really hard to educate people on that. You know, I just find it really interesting when people talk about the GLBT community, all anybody wants to talk about is who somebody's sleeping with, which is craziness to me, because we all work. We all have to pay our bills.
We all have children.
We all have to take our kids to school. We all have to figure out how to feed our kids. We all have to figure out how to dress our kids. And I just, it is always interesting to me when that's what people focus on. People don't focus on what married heterosexuals do in their bedroom. So I don't understand why people focus on what committed people do in the GLBT community. That's, to me, that's unimportant. I don't think anyone has a right to ask me who I'm with or who I love. You know, being a straight person, I don't think it should be like that with a gay person I've had, or bisexual, transgender, what have you. And I tell you, I had to be educated on transgender. I had a transgender client, and he was born a man, but he identified as a woman. And, you know, when I talked to his mom told me that when he was in kindergarten, and I don't know if you remember when you were in kindergarten, Jennifer.
It was a very long time ago.
But and what her mom reminded me of is, in kindergarten, they line the boys up in one line and the girls up in another line.
That's right.
And then they walk him to the restroom or whatever. Well, he would watch. He was a boy back then.
Yeah.
But Demetric would always get in the girls' line. And the teachers had to go tell his mom, can you tell him that he needs to be in the boys' line? But he never identified as a boy, not ever. And the beautiful thing was, in representing, and in his life, he went by Danielle. So we had a discussion before our trial, before her trial. Are we going to try this case as Danielle, or are we going to try this case as Demetric? Because she was charged as her birth name. And I filed a motion to call her Danielle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the judge denied the motion.
Yeah.
But we decided that she would dress as she did in her life, as a woman. And so we had to, in voir dire, which is when you're choosing a jury, discuss that very delicate issue. Yeah. So I've just gone out of my way, I believe, to try to understand people who are different from me. But I am one who chooses to embrace differences, not find reasons to not like somebody because of differences. Because the beautiful thing about Danielle, I mean, this may seem trivial, but it's not. She had the most flawless eyebrows ever. And I was like, man, can you show me how to do that? I just think that we all, I mean, it seems minimal, but she had stuff to teach me. I had legal stuff to teach her. And so that is how we'll be on council. I want everyone to feel like they have a voice. I want everyone to feel that Yolanda will fight for you. So if you come to me and you have a problem, I'm not going to say, hey, who do you sleep with? You know, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to say, hey, do you have a traditional family? I'm not going to say that. I'm going to say, hey, you're a law-abiding, productive citizen. You are entitled to certain services, and let's see how we can best give you those services.
Yolanda Jones is running for city council person at large, District 5.
Position 5.
Position 5. It's not a district. It's not a position. And tomorrow is the last day for early voting from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. You can find out the early voting locations at harrisvotes.org. Also, if you don't vote early, then you have one last chance to vote on Saturday between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. And you can find out at that day you have to vote at your local precinct. And you can find that out by going to harrisvote.org. It's a very good website to tell you. You can either put in your address or your voter ID number. And again, KPFT does not endorse any candidates, but Yolanda is endorsed by the Houston GLBT Political Pact, along with many other organizations within the city of Houston. Yolanda, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, both of you.
Thank you. And you're listening to Queer Voices.
We'll commemorate a notable African anniversary and start to deck the halls. But first, with Nemesis Rising, we stand up to breathe life into the latest additions to the audio file.
Last year, Jacob and Joshua Miller, also known as Nemesis, were featured on the Logo Network reality series, Jacob and Joshua, Nemesis Rising. Hi, I'm J.D. Doyle.
I'm Chris Wilson, and you're listening to Audiophile. Their debut CD, also called Nemesis Rising, is out now, and Jacob says it covers a lot of ground.
The new album is fairly eclectic because it spans so many years. But I think the subject matter matched well. It's a little bit different. There's even kind of a country folk song on there. But for some reason, when I listen to it, I think it has good flow. So I'm really, really proud of it.
Dress you up, take it down, like you love it. Red light on, won't you come? You got the beat, I'm spinning on it. It's so atomic and you're looking like a bomb. For tonight, you're number one, baby. You're number one. You're number one in heaven. You're number one, baby. You're number one. You're number one in heaven.
Find out more about Nemesis Rising, the debut CD by Nemesis, at www.nemesisrising.com.
The duo, Goddess and She, combine rapping and soulful singing for their own blend of hip-hop. Goddess tells us about some of the elements of their latest album called Stand Up.
Well, we're really excited about the new album. It has 14 tracks on it, and it has a wide variety of sounds and topics, and it's really fun. It'll make you cry. It'll make you laugh. It'll make you want to bump it in your car and really just think about life and feel good about yourself. We always want people to feel empowered by our music, and I think this album, Stand Up, really captures that.
We can't deny it, but when I start to feel that I can't do nothing about it, so I wait, laying back, chilling in the cut, hoping someday it'll just be us. Till then, I could just live through my daydreams. Kind of like a drug, cause I'm feeling like a fiend. Or like a teen, having fantasies that's distracting me. Sexual by nature, make it hard to breathe. Someday you will be mine. Oh, I'm not, I will find. I want you to be mine. The one to love you better.
You can get more information about Stand Up, the new album by Goddess and She, at www.goddess.com. That's www.god-des.com.
Do you remember when we first got together? Life felt sweeter, everything felt so much better. And you made me feel things that I always seem to feel. And you made me wanna fly. Now I realize that it feels so good to be in the arms of destiny. It's a freedom tender piece.
If you want very danceable, high-energy music, then you need go no further than Breathe Life, the first full-length album by Brian Kent.
Well, Breathe Life is a series of different experiences that I've had in my life, especially with different relationships, with different people and family and friends. And each song kind of represents a different period of time in my life, and I wrote everyone to a specific experience.
Find out more about Brian Kent and his album Breathe Life at www.briankent.com. And there's a hyphen between his names, so that's www.brian-kent.com.
That's it for this edition of Audiophile. You can write to us at Post Office Box 66648, Houston, Texas 77006. Or by visiting our website at www.audiophile.org. That's www.audiophile.org.
Audiophile is produced by J.D. Doyle, Chris Wilson, and Christopher David Trenton. I'm J.D. Doyle.
And I'm Chris Wilson, reminding you to tune in the week of December 24th for our special half-hour-long Audiophile 2007 Year in Review. Keep listening.
And Married in South Africa, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute.
After having been together for 9 years, Vernon Gibbs and Tony Halls became the first gay couple to legally wed in South Africa on December 1st, 2006. Wearing their Game Ranger outfits, they exchanged rings and were pronounced a married couple, with friends and curious onlookers present in the small hall. A year earlier, a decision by the Constitutional Court required the new marriage law. It went into effect the day before their historic wedding. Gibbs said the marriage gives them greater legal protection as well as better medical aid and pension benefits. But, practicality aside, he said, marriage means a lifetime commitment. It means to cherish, obey, love, honor. It means through sickness and health. All those relevant words I never thought would be for me. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios of WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Alan Brown.
It's that time of the year again when many of you in the U.S. consider ways to maximize your annual charitable tax deductions. Unlike many other worthwhile causes, we can't survive without your help. Log on to thiswayout.org to get some unique musical, cultural, and historical programming from the This Way Out archives and further reduce your U.S. tax liability. Better us than the government of George W. Bush, right? No matter where you are in the world, we can't go on without you. Log on to thiswayout.org to help keep this program on the air. From the This Way Out family to you and yours, thank you and happy holidays.
Kiss you anytime, anywhere. Don't be misled by the card I've sent. It's not just a seasonal sentiment. You are my holiday. You are my season of joy. You are my holiday. Nothing can contain this love that grows and grows. Don't be misled by the song I sing. No melody can capture the happiness you bring. Of joy.
When it's Christmas in L.A., we play on the beach all day. I want to hold your hands rolling on the sand when it's Christmas in L.A. I've been good, for goodness sake, but the chimney came down with the Northridge quake. See the blazing Yule before us, and right next door we've got your menorah. You know, it's Christmas time.
That was a double dose of holiday cheer. Kim Char Meredith caroling You Are My Holiday, and Jay Spears treating us to Christmas in L.A. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Tanya Kane Perry, Bridget Strong, Rex Walker with Bill Kelly, Sherry Lunn, Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum, and Judd Proctor and Brian Burns with Alan Brown contributed program material. You previewed new CDs by Nemesis Rising, Goddess and She, and Brian Kent. And Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Listen online to This Way Out exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can also click on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Most This Way Out operating expenses are funded by donations from you, our listeners, and we thank you. Please view the Happy Holidays message at thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air. We literally can't go on without you. You can also subscribe to CDs or cassettes of our weekly programs there. Email us at tworadio@aol.com or write to P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on Radio Free Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz, California, 4CCR, Cairns, Queensland, WSMU, North Dartmouth, Massachusetts, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we're all going to stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
And we have a number of events that are going on this week, which include Wednesday.
The GLBT Political Caucus is holding its holiday party and fundraiser. And for actual time is 6 to 8 p.m. And the address and all is on the website, thecaucus.org. You can find all in there also. You'll have an address as well as a map so you can find it.
And this Thursday is the tribute to Dalton DeHart.
Absolutely. We had Dalton on earlier. It was wonderful seeing him again.
Well, it is that time of year, and the Women's Networking Night at Meteor is this Wednesday night starting at 6:30 p.m. And Meteor is at 2306 Genesee. That's right where Fairview curves into Tuam. I want to say Tuam, but, you know, that's me. And the Stonewall Democrats are going to have their holiday party 7 to 10 p.m. on the 15th, and that's going to be at the Rice Hotel Loft Club Suite. Donations will be accepted and cash bar, blah, blah, wonderful advertisers. We will celebrate the coming end of the Bush administration.
It can't come soon enough, and just like the end of the hurricane season.
Do you know that the national debt has doubled since he's been president?
Yes, absolutely.
But, you know, Republicans, they're fiscal. You know,
yes,
people
exactly.
vote for fiscal.
Physically irresponsible.
You know, and somebody says, well, the Democrats don't know how to win elections, but the Republicans don't know how to run government.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Yes.
Of course, some of us are biased about our political affiliation.
It's amazing how the Republicans became exactly what they said the Democrats were.
I know.
only worse.
Yes, but especially money. God.
So we have two new people working with us, Brian with an I and Brian with an Y.
Yeah, we have two new interns.
Yeah.
We have volunteers. Hooray for the VIM.
But what scares me, you know, Glenn is a computer engineer. And
he's a rocket scientist.
Yes, and one of them is a chemical engineer, and the other one is a what kind? Anyway, it's like civil.
Engineer.
Well, I'm pretty civil, but you know, it's like the land of Dilbert now. And
well, Glenn's an engineer.
Yeah.
He's a rocket scientist.
So they're going to be helping us out. And I used
to be a radio engineer.
That's true. So, see, it's scary.
I liked trains when I was young.
Did you?
As opposed to dolls.
As opposed to dolls at the time.
You're so silly. And is there any other...
Well, JD, what's going on?
Yes.
Yeah, JD. You're moving to...
I'm moving way north.
Uh-huh. I bought a house in the Woodlands, and I'll be moving after the first of the year, and I'm real excited about that.
So if there's
you're
going to
integrate the Woodlands?
Yes. I want their names, yes.
Yeah, contact Deborah at queervoices.org, and I'll pass it on to JD. Also, if you should be someone who's interested in learning how to do radio and being part of this show, particularly if you're under 30, particularly if you're a person of color, particularly if you are female, that doesn't mean you have to be here every week. It just means that you have an opportunity to be involved in the Queer Voices Collective.
Or trans. They can be trans. I mean, you know.
We need other voices.
Yeah.
Yes. We need more queer voices.
That's right.
And also, if you pledged to KPFT during the recent long marathon, please do fulfill your pledge.
Before the next one comes up, which will probably be in January.
Yes, well, and of course they have the special one for the archive.
Oh, and happy birthday, Glenn.
Yes, happy birthday.
Glenn or JD? Who?
No, it's not me.
Okay, it's Glenn. It is Glenn. I thought somebody sent me a thing.
He's 39 again.
I know, for the last time.
Yeah.
Now, Jack and I have birthdays coming up in January, as does Jimmy Carper. So I think we'll just, you know.
Cancel ours.
Yeah. Yes. No. We want those birthdays. So we really appreciate you taking part in our little program tonight. And, boy, it was a diverse one.
Absolutely. That's what we are.
Politics,
we represent
music,
the community.
Politics, music.
Community events.
Next week will be even more exciting. So join us then.
So saying goodnight is...
J.D. Doyle.
Deborah Bell.
Jennifer Renee.
Jack Falinski.
And Glenn Holt. And just by way of recap, tonight on the show we had David Elliott from Washington, D.C. with his Inside the Beltway and Beyond report. And remember that the Iowa caucus is just 1 month away. Community photographer Dalton DeHart was here and talked with Sally Huffer and Jennifer Renee and Jack Falinski about the upcoming fundraising event honoring him and his life at the Montrose Counseling Center. And that's going to be Thursday night at 6 p.m. J.D. and Deborah and the beautiful boys from the stars of Stages Theater Holiday production. It's a comedy called Altar Boys. It's opening this Friday. They were here. And Yolanda Jones, a candidate for city council. And remember that the runoff election is this Saturday. And she was here talking with Jack and Jennifer. And, of course, we had more from This Way Out, including J.D. Doyle's audio file. On next week's Queer Voices, be sure to tune in when we have our regular features. And we will also be talking with Colleen Fisher, the general manager of the Bayou City Performing Arts, about their holiday show, Ho 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 Down to Hollywood, featuring performance sets by the Gay Men's Chorus of Houston, Bayou City Women's Chorus, and Bayou City Chorale, the combined voices of GMCH and BCWC. We will also have pundit Jeff Reed, our political beat reporter, who will give us his views on the current political scene, and Mara Kiesling with the National Center for Transgender Equality will be talking with Jennifer Renee. You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Falinski. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Falinski. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Earth
Care of Texas makes it easy for you to protect the environment while supporting more than 70 leading environmental organizations through payroll contribution plans at public and private workplaces in Houston and across Texas. Help the environment while you work. One environment, one simple way to care for it. For more information, check out earthshare-texas.org or 800-GREEN-TX.
This is KPFT Houston. KPFT has just completed our final on-air membership drive for 2007. This drive, KPFT...
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.